Blog Talk Radio.
Staring at a stop sign, watching people drive by, T-Mac on the radio. Got so much on your mind, nothing's really going right, looking for a ray of hope.
Starting off the show with that because I want you to know there is a reason for you not to give up. We all have challenges. We all have difficulties that we face along our journey in this life. But with faith in God, you can know that you have someone in your corner on your side that is going to give you the power and the strength that you need not to give up, but to move forward and to move forward in a way that's going to just benefit your life far beyond what you could ever imagine. I'm your host, Jackie Wayans. I'm really happy to be with you again tonight. And if you've been listening the past couple of weeks, we've been on this journey. And last week, I shared with you a story of Victor Blackman, who is an older guy who's lived his life fully to the fullest in the clubs and doing everything there was to do in terms of just being in the music industry and having, you know, women galore, and then coming to a place where he found nothing but emptiness in that. And even after a period of being engaged and, you know, coming to a point of almost getting married, realizing that what he really needed was the Lord, and he has been able to maintain his celibacy for 8 years. And I shared at the end of that show that that's not everyone's story, of course. We're all at different phases and places. But to be pleasing to God in a way that is where we understand that our lives have value, and the things that he has asked us not to partake of is not because he wants to steal our joy or make our lives miserable. It's because he's trying to protect us, protect our hearts, protect our bodies, protect this world and the system that we're living in, and to keep tragic things from occurring. And every time that we step out of that, we open ourselves up to a whole bunch of hurt and things that really was never his desire for us. So tonight, as promised, I have Talib Hudson with us. He's a dear friend of mine. We've worked together as colleagues. He's a young brother who's socially conscious, who's intelligent, and might I add, he's also handsome. So here he is in his 30s. He loves the Lord, and he's living a life. And we're going to talk about that, but we're going to talk about the journey. Welcome, Talib.
Thank you. Good evening. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, you're coming through loud and clear.
Excellent.
Loud and clear. So what we're going to do is I want you to kind of, we're going to just take it back a little bit, because you're 32 now, but I know I shared that when I was growing up, the type of family that I grew up in, it was told to me and it was expected that, you know, you didn't have sex until you got married. And it wasn't necessarily a Christian thing as much as it was a family value type of thing. And I want to just get a sense about you when you were growing up. What was it like? What was the concept for you?
Well, when I was growing up, we were at that time when my parents were still together. We were in the Nation of Islam as a family, and so we had much more socially conservative values. So not only did that mean abstaining from sex, but also, you know, of course, from eating pork, but also from drinking, smoking, and that kind of thing, and really being much more focused and purposeful and diligent about your business.
Okay, so in general, you had, you know, a life that was of a kind of conservative value, you know, just a decent kind of conduct behavior across the board.
Yeah, definitely. And especially, you know, as a young man, and even as I got older after my parents divorced, I was still living in a household. Well, once that happened, I was living in a household of all women with two older sisters and a mother. And so I was very, I try to be very cognizant of the dynamic between men and women and males and females and the pain that can come from relationships. And that was something that I think as a child, I as an adult looking back on my childhood, I can see that the relationship that I saw, I didn't see, definitely had an impact. But in terms of upbringing, there was definitely a lot of structure, and there was definitely a sense of you will do this and you won't do that, and that was very clear. There were no blurred lines.
All right. Well, yeah, I can relate to that definitely. Tell us about what age did girls come online for you? When did you realize, you know, we were out there in the universe in a very different way than before?
Probably in a meaningful way, probably somewhere in middle school. I think I was about 11 years old was the first time I think I ever remember looking at a one of my classmates in a way that I had never looked at one of my classmates before in that way. I wouldn't even say sexual way, because I was only 11, but mm-hmm. you know, it was weird because at the time I didn't really even know what intrigued me, but I think probably in some kind of meaningful substantive way that would later on lead to you know, how people feel as adults. You know, when you're a kid, when you're a little kid,
moment of awareness, you know, where you're no longer
yeah.
just climbing the tree and playing in the dirt together, where it's like, huh, there's something else going on here. And, you know, like myself, you grew up in the city. I grew up in Brooklyn. You grew up in Harlem, right?
Yes.
Okay. So now I know you went to boarding school, however. So
yes.
Talk to me a little bit about that transition of leaving, you know, Harlem, New York City, and going to a kind of small town, small school environment, and how did things start to change for you?
Going to boarding school for me was definitely, it was in some ways a gift and a curse. It enabled me to have a wonderful academic experience, and I had never seen the opera before. So I go to this small school in a small town, and to me it seemed like the middle of nowhere, and it was quiet at night, which was weird. But at the same time, you know, I was able to take on leadership roles, and I had the ability to explore myself and explore my leadership abilities in a way that I think I wouldn't have been able to do if I stayed in New York. Now, of course, there were issues of race and class that were very prevalent, you know, especially coming from a perspective in which, you know, I saw myself as and to a certain extent being less than, and a large part of that due to the environment, you know, of the 80s and 90s in Harlem. You know, so for example, the building that I grew up in, you know, by the time I went to boarding school, the conditions had deteriorated greatly due to crackheads breaking the front door lock, and we couldn't even get mail at home anymore. We had to go to the post office to pick up our mail because crackheads had basically would continually break open the mailboxes. So to go from that experience, you know, to rolling hills and green grass, and people who some folks who I remember one person literally said, "I have more money than I know what to do with." Not that everyone there was rich, but it was a great affluence. It was quite a shift.
So now, were you able to hold on to your moral values while you were in this atmosphere?
Yes, definitely, because I was. I think, given the upbringing that I had, you know, being very purposeful, being structured, you know, I was very much. You know, even before I was a Christian, I was very much focused on God, I would say, and trying to uphold a certain standard of conduct and standard of being. And so, you know, for me, you know, some people say, well, I get involved in certain situations because of the circumstances. Well, you know, I chose my circumstances to a certain extent. You know, And people, you know, I didn't drink, I didn't smoke, I didn't even curse, and so I think that that helped to insulate me from some of the social pressures. Not only been going to this school, which is in a small town, but also carrying myself in a certain way that people said, well, you know, Tlaib, you know, he's a goody goody. So I was insulated, I think, from a lot of social pressures.
Yeah, I can understand the goody-two-shoes labeling, and sometimes you want to fight back from that. But, you know, just to be clear for our listening audience, this was boarding school for high school. It was
yeah.
co-ed. So now,
yeah.
were girls noticing you at this time, or, you know, were you aware of what was going on?
I wasn't necessarily aware I mean, I think some girls may have noticed me, but for the most part, you know, I wasn't necessarily one of the popular kids or one of the cool kids. I mean, I was popular to a certain degree. I mean, I served on student government, and you know, I was involved in a lot of activities and had a lot of leadership positions. But you know, I wasn't necessarily the person that everyone was trying to hang out with on a weekend night. Again, because
you
know,
it sounds like you fell into the, you know, best friends, or you're like a brother zone.
Exactly. I was friend zoned a lot because, and what ended up happening was is that girls would come and talk to me about the guys who had treated them poorly, and they come cry to me about it. Then I was wondering what I was doing wrong in being trying to be respectful and uphold some kind of standard that I made up really in my head. And then I didn't understand why I wasn't really getting anywhere with that. So that was kind of my high school experience.
Did you ever try to change your persona?
I did, actually. So there was this one. It was only for like a week, and I'm probably the only person who remembers it. And anyone listening is going to think I'm silly, but there was one week period where you know I was tired of being. Someone said to see. We all view you like our brother. And I had been so tired of hearing that, because that's what I've been hearing to that point for my entire life. Khalid, you're like my brother.
Right.
You're such a good friend. That I changed my persona. I carried myself definitely with a different level of confidence. I was much more flirtatious, with a different level. I wouldn't even say confidence, but arrogance. But what happened was is that I wasn't really able, I didn't feel in control of how I was acting and the person with whom I felt I was becoming. And so, you know, it's like the saying that a person can only wear two masks before they forget which one is the true self. And so I realized for me it was more important to be the person who I wanted to be instead of trying to fit a persona just to be popular, or just to kind of get what I want, or fight this your brother friend quote unquote stigma that I felt that I had at the time.
Excellent. On that note, I'm going to play a track that I played last week by Jay Moss called "I'm Not Perfect." And when we return, we're going to go into Talib's college days and see what changed.
Anybody ever been here?
Every day's a mad race, moving at a fast pace, y'all. Never seem to get a break, never seem to get away, no. If it ain't working hard, being a dad or mom, I'll be the first to admit I'm neglecting the relationship. I'm not talking to you, spending time with you. Like I should, forgive me, I'll get better.
Give me another chance. yesterday.
None of us are perfect. But thankfully, if you put your faith and your trust in God, His perfection will shine in and through us. You are listening to Don't Give Up Radio, and I'm your host, Jackie Wayans. We have been talking with Talib Hudson, and we're going to continue speaking with him. And tonight's show is called Single and Young and Celibate. Is it possible? So we're going to go back with Talib now, and we're going to just find out about his college days and how God just navigated his path step by step. So, Talib.
Yes.
You said that while you were in high school, you know, you pretty much were able to keep your moral compass. But now college happens, and you go away to college, and even though you were at boarding school and it was co-ed, the dorms weren't co-ed. But now, you know, talk to us, because you might have some young people listening who haven't gone away to college yet and they're looking forward to this experience. How do things change? You know, set the environment, set the tone.
Well, when I was in college, it was really – well, let me just tell you how it was. So my freshman dorm, I had a single room. And actually, my entire freshman dorm was singles. And I want to disabuse anyone of any illusions. Most people do not have singles like that in their freshman year of college. So I was lucky. But the thing is that not only was the dorm co-ed, but the setup was that it was boy, girl, boy, girl, boy, girl. So that my neighbor in front of me, the room, when I opened my door, the person opened the door in front of me was a female, and the person to my left and the person to my right was also a female. So this was the entire setup, not just for my floor, but the entire building. But the bathrooms were communal. So when you are going to take a shower in the morning, and they did have, like, you know, the boys, the men's room and the women's room, but, you know, you had to still get to the shower. And so it was quite common every single day to see, you know, your classmates walking around in their towel, you know, fresh from the shower, every day. And, you know, whether it's morning, noon, and night, because, you know, college has no real schedule,
right.
You know, this is especially people going out to the club and everything and pre-gaming and all that kind of stuff. So that was my introduction to college.
Wow. Now, a lot of parents are concerned and authority figures that when kids go away to college, they're going to push the envelope and start various experimentation and exploration. Did you go through that?
You know, when I first got to college, that first semester, I was about my business. You know, I was, at that time, I was a devout Muslim. I was praying five times a day. I was in the Muslim Students Association. You know, I wanted to get, you know, the best grades that I could get. And, you know, so that was really, you know, that was really my focus. And I hadn't been prepared socially. I haven't been prepared well academically for college, but I wasn't prepared socially
for
all the things that were going around around me at that time. But after a certain while, I got tired of trying to, you know, uphold this, you know, this standard of trying to be good or trying to be moral or trying to be the good guy. And so my spring semester, my grades tanked, and, you know, I was more concerned. I wanted to have fun. It seemed like everyone else was having fun except for me, and I wanted to have fun too. So that's what that's what I aspired to do.
All right. Well, what did that fun look like for you? What were some of the things that you engaged in?
Well, so that's when, you know, well, this is what we're talking about. So that's when I lost my virginity at that point. Not everyone knows. In that spring semester of my freshman year of college, towards the, you know, I still didn't, you know, drink. But at the end of that semester, at the end of spring semester, that was the first time that I'd ever tried marijuana, with some friends in the dorm. But I think I didn't really know how to be out there and how to have fun, so it was kind of just fumbling around. You know, went out to some clubs, but, you know, I was just, you know, 18, 19 at that point, so I could only do but so much. But I was really trying to, the point was I was trying to figure out how to break out of this mold, which is something I felt confining at that point, of trying to be good.
Right. So now, was this someone that you were in a relationship with? You were, you know, a couple?
No, not at all. It was actually more of a impulsive impulsive activity, which there was but this was not a relationship at all. It was college. I mean, it was college.
I get it. You know, and I think you mentioned earlier too that you had a certain view about relationships because of what you'd seen with your mom and dad and other family members. It doesn't sound as if you really, like most of us, because I came from a broken home as well, kind of had a faith in relationships that it could work between a man and a woman in a long-term sense.
Right. Yeah, because for the most part, at that time, I think almost everyone on both my mother and my father's side of the family had been divorced at least once. I mean, I'm talking about aunts, uncles, grandparents, everyone. I mean, some people had remarried, but at least everyone, there was no one that I knew who had gotten married one time, had kids, and then were still in a happy, loving, profusely loving relationship. I just didn't see that anywhere. And so for me, particularly seeing, you know, my own parents break up, you know, for me, relationships seemed like a futile enterprise. You know, so why get involved with that if it's just going to end? So relationships weren't something to me that seemed to be worth the trouble.
Well, you know, without delving too much into this relationship in your first encounter, rather, how did you feel the morning after or the days and weeks after? Did you, you know, was there remorse? Did you feel, you know, fine? Did you say, oh, wow, I've discovered something new? You know, what was your response emotionally to this?
No, I mean, I personally was fine. What ended up happening, though, was that, you know, the other person, you know, came back and said that they, you know, were not, not to necessarily give their exact verbiage, but they were not as comfortable with the situation after. And not that it wasn't, you know, any kind of, nothing that was improper, I think that one thing I've come to realize, and I won't get too far into it, but as an adult, I didn't realize at the time is that that sex can be very powerful and emotional, even when both people think that it's completely casual and that there's nothing else involved. But that always necessarily isn't the case.
That's a very, very powerful statement, and it also speaks to some of the just innate differences between men and women, because for yourself, you know, you at the time, and you were definitely talking about pre your commitment to the Lord, but you were fine. You didn't feel any guilt. You didn't feel any remorse. But here's the female coming in saying, you know, I felt used, for lack of a better word, you know, and, you know, for you to come into that realization now that this is a very powerful thing, and it was designed to be powerful. God knew exactly what he was doing, and it's designed to be powerful within the context that it's used. There's actually a verse in Song of Solomon, in chapter 2, but it actually goes throughout all the chapters. And I remember being a young believer and not really understanding this until really about 5 to 6 years ago. Which is sad, considering I had already been married with children. But it said, you know, daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you by the gazelles and by the does of the field, which is very, you know, poetic language. But it says, do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires, or don't awaken love before its time. And so there's a proper time for us to come into the fullness of these experiences. But when we do it outside of context, there is harm that comes into play. I'm going to play another selection. We'll be right back with Talib, and he's going to just share a little bit more with us.
Created in me a clean heart and purify me, purify me.
Created me a clean heart. If anyone's listening today and you have come to the place in your life where you decide you want to make a change, that you want to give the Lord your all. It is never too late. This is not a show about condemnation. This is a show about opportunity, opportunity to change and grow and go into the direction that's going to really make a future for you. And that's what God said in his word, that he has a hope for you and a future to prosper you and not to harm you. And that's something that we just really need to take to heart, and we really need to believe for ourselves. So, Talib,
yes.
We're past college now, a few years. You're out of college. You're probably working on your own. And you come to a place where you met someone who was a believer. You didn't know it at the time. And through that interaction with that person, you yourself, not immediately, but over the course of time, decided that you were going to do the thing that you thought you'd never, ever do. And you said, yes, I'm going to become a Christian. I'm going to follow Jesus Christ.
Yeah, now when I say never, ever, I mean never, ever, 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 ever. But, you know, I mean, I guess that just shows the power and the glory of God to not only to change people's hearts, but to put people in your life who will help lead you to where he wants you to go. So, you know, the person who really was really instrumental, I didn't know of her religious or spiritual background at the time, but when I found out that she was a Christian, you know, I told her straight up, you know, well, if you push your religion on me, if I feel like you're proselytizing, we can't be friends. Like, I was serious. Like, we can't be friends. Because I had such negative experiences with people who, although for reasons, you know, they loved me very much, just came at me in a way that was hurtful, and I didn't want to be, you know, and I had no interest in being hurt anymore, particularly from someone with whom I was romantically, well, soon to be romantically involved with. And so she was very instrumental because she would help. She listened, and I did not feel judged. And so I really do give her a lot of credit for where I've come spiritually.
And so, yeah, we can be used in wonderful ways if we don't approach things as judgment, but really listen to one another, and that's what this show hopes to do, and approach things in the same way that the Lord Jesus Christ did, which was you tell the truth, but you tell it in love. And when you do that, it kind of draws the Holy Spirit draws the person's heart to the Lord himself. So through this relationship, you became friends and you got closer and you eventually became engaged, right?
Yes, indeed. We definitely became engaged.
Okay, so now, during the time of the engagement, at the initial point of that, both of you decided to be celibate at that time.
Because, and the particular reason, because she had been so instrumental in helping me to come to faith, you know, our engagement just felt so it seemed spirit filled, and you know what better way to honor God but than to honor God, you know, and so you know we made a very conscious decision. One of the things that we had said, you know, in our relationship and in during our engagement period, was that everything will be fine if we let, you know, if we put God, and you know, if Jesus is in the front within the wheel, so we can be, you know, in the back seat and let him direct and guide our lives. And so that was the attitude and the spirit with which, you know, we kind of went about that.
So here you are, two adults. You're not even talking about teenagers now. You're talking about late 20s, early 30s, somewhere in there. And your relationship consists of kissing and making out. And nothing more.
I mean, I wouldn't even really say making out. You know, we definitely, again, you know, we really focused on, you know, really, you know, honoring, you know, God as much as, you know, to the fullest extent. And also because, you know, we knew that, you know, that there are certain things that are set aside for marriage. And, you know, in waiting, you know, sometimes there's a greater reward when you wait for something. And mm-hmm. so that was something that was very important to us, is not to spoil what God had set aside for us. And so that was something that we were very, very cognizant of, is not just thinking about the present moment, but thinking mm-hmm. about what was to come and what was to become, what was to come as far as with God's will.
And that is a wonderful perspective, and it is the right perspective. But as time progressed, or as time progresses, rather, in relationships, sometimes one might take the lead spiritually, or maybe the same pace is not kept, and there's a yin and yang kind of pulling situation. In this particular situation, the engagement ended, the relationship
yeah.
ended, and considering that you felt so strongly that if you put Jesus in the front and let him take the wheel, which you were right, you were not wrong. But when that happened, sure, there was some emotional devastation there. And so talk to me about the emotional devastation, and then tell me if that affected your commitment to remaining celibate at that point. You know, did it go out the window? Did you continue to pursue? What happened?
Well, you know, because, you know, my relationship, you know, our engagement was so spiritually, was tied up in our spirituality, which I think is a good thing, but at the same time that there were some spiritual issues, at least on my part, in terms of what I felt God was leading me. I felt God had another plan for me, and so that was very difficult for me to accept when you're with someone who has helped bring you to faith, and you think that you're in a spirit and God-guided relationship, and then you feel that God is telling you, well, maybe, you know, there's another direction I want you to go in. And so when we broke up, that, you know, that all of that was hard to reconcile, because there's also the very real human aspect of the emotion and the pain and knowing, and the guilt of knowing that, you know, you've hurt someone. And so, you know, it's not even that my commitment went out the window, but I jumped out the window while the car was still in motion, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I decided to, you know, spiritually, I had my seatbelt on, I was in the back seat, and I said, well, you know what, if this ride is going someplace where I'm not really sure it's going, I thought this was going to be a smooth ride. And this ride got real bumpy. And so mm-hmm. I decided that I wanted to, I didn't want to be celibate anymore. I didn't want to be confined. I didn't want to be constrained. I didn't want to follow the rules. And because, you know, I felt like nothing is promised. The plans you make, right, the plans that man makes are not guaranteed. And so because my plans were not fulfilled, then I felt, well, there's no reason to have any plans. Let me just live for today. And so that was kind of my intent in terms of, you know, how I approached my relationship going forward.
It sounds to me like you were actually just trying to fill the pain or fill the void, or not try to deal with the pain of the loss and the confusion of it.
Definitely. And, you know, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I mean, I do eat cookies, which is a bad habit. But you know, whereas otherwise, you know, maybe some people would turn to alcohol or to drugs. You know, for me, not just sex, but companionship and looking to fill the pain that from a lost relationship, I wanted to fill that pain with physical companionship to kind of mask that. So that's, you know, so I went looking for that, basically.
Okay, we're going to go into another selection right now, and I do want the listeners to know I will open up the phone lines a little later, so be prepared to call in to have questions if you can relate, if you're going through, if you want prayer. I'm here. The number is going to be 855-236-3033. It's a toll-free number. That's 855-236-3033. Alrighty. For some reason, there's some dead space, so we're just going to keep it moving. Oh, there we go.
Once again, yeah. Once again, again I call you, and again you answer. Again I need you, and again you're there. Again I reach out, and again you hold me. You console me once more. I need company, someone just to sit with me. Then I need a helping hand, someone to understand me. Yeah. When I need someone who cares, someone to wipe away my tears, reach out and calm my fears. I know that you'll be there. Thank you.
again and again, Jesus is there every time. He's not the type of hand that pushes us away. We turn away because we feel we are not enough. But, you know, Talib, one of the things that you said earlier on when you were in college that first semester, and you said you just grew tired and weary of being the good guy and getting the good grades and doing all the right things. And the reality is we will become tired if we're doing it from our own strength and our own energy. And you, there was no way for you to know that at that time. But, you know, when we come into this relationship with the Lord, as it says in Romans 10:9-10, if you confess with your mouth and believe in your heart Jesus Christ as Lord, you shall be saved. That along with that is not just the saying that, you also immediately receive the Spirit of God, which then gives us the ability, the power, the strength to exercise in these areas. And we don't want to make it sound like it's just easy. We don't want to make it sound like, oh, yes, this all you have to do is trust in the Lord and you'll never have a sexual desire or temptation. That's not realistic. We're in these human bodies and, you know, we're sexual beings, as I stated last week, and it's a part of our nature, right? Talk to the listeners, talk to young adults right now, young people, and tell them, you know, where are you at this point in your journey? I know you were telling me about your church and a challenge that we offered.
Right. So, you know, after trying to fill, you know, fill the hole inside, you know, what I felt, you know, fill whatever gaps with physical gratification, I felt that that it just wasn't, I wasn't being fulfilled. And I realized that I wasn't spiritually centered, and I hadn't been spiritually centered since my engagement ended. And I've really been struggling with the physical part, and my church issued a 5-month challenge to, you know, 5 months to go to be celibate, of course, you know, with the idea that it becomes a lifestyle change. You know, just like with fitness, you don't just change your diet with the idea that you're gonna go back to eating cookies. You go for a lifestyle change. So I decided to take the 5-month challenge. It's been about 2.5 months now, I think. It started in August because, you know, I felt that it was the perfect opportunity. And I felt that God – actually, there's a passage, I'm forgetting, there's a passage in Corinthians that says about temptation that, you know, that says that, you know, God gives you a way out of temptation. Temptation is going to come, but God will give you a way out of it.
So
I felt like the 5-month challenge was a way for me to take exit stage right away from temptation and to get back to God, not just in the physical aspect, but really try to recenter and refocus all of my life around God and once again get back in the car, get back in the back seat, and let God take the wheel.
That's amazing, and I just thank you for your courage and being able to share this and to make the right steps, because, you know, it's interesting that the very thing that you used to take a stand in terms of ending your previous relationship, in a sense, was this very same thing that led to this period of a fall in your life. But through this, you're going to be actually stronger and know the Lord better and be closer to Him. And I love the fact that you're doing the show at the halfway mark. I'm convinced without a shadow of the doubt that you are going to go all the way and beyond, because God is so wonderful and faithful that when you come to the end of the 5 months, just the richness of the relationship that you would have built with Him, and that's what makes Christianity different than everything else. It's this very intimate family that we are part of, where He is our Father, and we can come to our Heavenly Father and really talk about very intimate things. It's not like He doesn't know. It's just to lay it bare in front of Him and to put it out there. Why don't you give some of our listeners advice how to kind of deal with these emotions, how to kind of navigate being celibate, because, and I have to say this, our society makes it very hard, from the music to commercials to music to movies. It's almost everywhere. But the concept that young people have is like, well, everyone's doing it. And the concept that a lot of authority figures have is, well, I'm not even going to discuss abstinence or celibacy because they're not going to do it anyway. And I think there's a great disservice in that, because it doesn't give the mind a place to go when they are searching. And I believe everyone comes to that place where they're like, you know what, I don't want it to be this way. I want to reserve myself for that one person. So what would you say? What would be that advice?
Well, first I would say definitely to pray. And I don't mean that in a contrived way. I mean, really just talk to God about it. Not, doesn't have to be a super duper get on your knees and shout hallelujah. Just say, hey, God, I'm struggling with this. So that's number one. Number two, move on purpose. A great friend and mentor of mine always talks about moving on purpose and being on purpose. And if you fill your time with things that are purposeful, you'll really, you know, you will find that you don't have as much time on your hands to do other things that you don't really want to do or need to be doing or whatever, what have you. So, you know, really fill your time and move on purpose. Three, there's a book that I think was helpful to me called Every Man's Battle by Fred Stoker. And it's a little bit outdated, a little bit corny and cheesy, but still I think it's a worthwhile, he has a whole series for men and women too, but particularly for the young men, you know, the Every Man's Battle is a good book. It talks about a lot of these issues. And then just, you know, stay on guard, guard yourself, you know, maintain your integrity, because, men and women are attracted to other people who have integrity. Integrity is something that is very attractive. And so the more integrity you have, the more opportunities may present themselves, which means you have to have that much more integrity, which presents more opportunities. So just be on guard. So, you know, pray, move on purpose, you know, be on guard with your integrity. And from a practical standpoint, you know, check out Every Man's Battle.
You're so right about the integrity. Hey, guys listening, this is a best-kept secret, okay? If you're a man of integrity and you know how to praise God, oh my gosh, that is like the most attractive thing to a woman. And so be that, but don't at the same time allow when that relationship starts for the very thing that causes attraction to be the thing that breaks down the relationship. One of the things that I really admire about Megan Good, as she was going through her courtship period with Mr. Devon Franklin, who's now her husband, is that when they were in that courtship period, anytime there were those difficult moments, she said, I love him too much to allow him to be tempted in that way. And that would be the restraining force, because her love for his integrity and for his character wouldn't allow her to be the impetus to break that down. And so we want to be really careful about that. So I'm really thankful that you brought that up. I'm going to play a song. I'm going to open the phone lines. Okay, here's how it's going to work. You can call 855-236-3033 during the song. If no phone lines open up during the song, then the show is going to be over. So this is the time to call in, 855-236-3033. Tully, thank you so much for joining us. If you want to stay on, you can. If you just want to listen in, you can. But this has been really enjoyable. And I would add also, particularly young men, stay active, you know, do the sports thing, keep busy, you know, josh around with your friends. Just don't stay locked up in your room or, you know, taking, you know, 5 hours in the bathroom or anything like that. Keep yourself active and, like Talib said, live on purpose. Thank you again, Talib.
Thanks, Jackie, and God bless.
God bless you.
Searching for some things to satisfy. Paid a lot of prices on too many nights I cried. In my time of desperation came a simple revelation, and that was all I ever really wanted was you. Thought I wanted money, now I thought I wanted fame. Oh, I thought it would fulfill me, that's until it finally came. And then I briefly heard you begging me, and it only took 1 second to see all I ever really wanted was you. There were times I didn't know what
I wanted
to do. Said I didn't know what
to think of you.
But when I turned around and turned and found you were there all the time, I didn't know
where to go.
I didn't know what
I wanted to know.
But you loved me till you loved me to the truth. Yes, you
loved me like you.
If there were a moral to the things that I have learned, yeah, it would be to follow love every move and every turn. In the time of second chances, what I found at second glances is that all I ever really wanted was you. Yeah. There were times I didn't know what
I
didn't know. But when I turned around and turned and found you were there all the time, I didn't know
where to go.
Said I didn't know what
I wanted.
But then you loved me till you loved me to the truth. Yeah, you loved me like you. Yeah, if there were a moral for the things that I had learned, oh, it would be to follow love every move and every turn. For in time of second chances, while I found in second glances,